Black Friday at BJ's Wholesale Club is so big, we called in the expert at paying less around the holidays.
Scrooge here. Past, present, or future, it's hard to beat the Black Friday deals at BJ's. Believe me, I've tried. Get 25% off select toys, 30% off select small appliances, and 45% off select TVs through December 1st. Plus, doorbuster deals Thanksgiving weekend. These prices are so good they even rattled old Marley's chain. Ah, humbug. Sorry, old habit.
Visit BJ's.com/Black Friday for holiday savings.
All right, Matt. So you know those the saying, a penny for your thoughts and don't nickel and dime me?
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of the another day, another dollar mm-hmm. quote? Whoever came up with those really knows how to coin a phrase.
I like that one. That's a good one.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Man, I'm doing pretty doggone good.
Good, good. So before we get into it, I'll say go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. You can sign up to become a patron. We've got multiple different levels, and we've got a buttload in our back catalog mm-hmm. that you can check out. So if it's a dark week and Matt and I aren't putting out a main episode, there's stuff on the Patreon that you can go listen to. Plus, if you sign up and you're a $10 a month member, you get our second show, Side Quest, that has absolutely nothing to do with Graveyard Tales. And it's just me and Matt having fun, joking with each other, trying to freak each other out. I've gotten on a kick of telling stories about people who survived things that they shouldn't have survived. So it's a lot of fun. You can go over there, and if you want to hear Matt and I in a different format than Graveyard Tales, where we're not censored like we are on Graveyard Tales. We self-censor here, so we don't say things that might offend people. We don't do that over there on SideQuest. So go
Equal
go check
opportunity
out.
Offenders over there.
Exactly. Yeah. We offend ourselves. We offend everybody.
But we're nice about it.
Yeah, yeah. So go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales, sign up to become a patron. Also check out our sponsors. We only do sponsors that we believe in. If Matt and I have a sponsor, it's because we use the product or we think you guys will love the product. We have, believe it or not, turned down sponsors because we didn't believe in their product. I know that might be hard for people to believe, but it's not all about the money for me and Matt. So if you help us out by going and checking the website, using our code, then that will keep these sponsors coming back. They'll know that we've done a good job in telling you about it, and they will sponsor another episode of Graveyard Tales. So down in our show notes, you can find the links. Go check them out. Matt, I think that's all the housekeeping I got for today. So why don't you tell us? Why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
All right, tonight we have a special guest coming on to join us, and we're really excited that this guest reached out and it gave us the opportunity to experience a new podcast that wasn't necessarily on our radar. But we enjoy it. We think our listeners are going to enjoy it too. Tonight, our guest is going to be Andrew Crabtree, creator of The Void podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And the Void is a little bit different than, you know, a lot of our other friends' shows. The Void is a serialized thriller, suspense, kind of paranormal, you name it. But it's a series. It's an audio drama, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as Adam and I were talking about this, this was a thing, you know, the years leading up to us doing Graveyard Tales. We had shows that we would talk about. We enjoyed, and it just kind of faded away a little bit. It didn't become as common, especially in this genre.
Yeah.
And so we're glad that Andrew is bringing it back. So a really great conversation. We talk a lot about, you know, his show, talk about his inspiration behind it. And we dig into some other topics, you know, it's Adam and I, you know, we can't talk about anything other than this. So,
right.
So we hope you enjoy.
We can't keep a straight path on something. We've got to veer and
talk
about
exactly right.
A lot of things.
So, we hope you enjoy it. Our interview with Andrew Crabtree, creator of the Void podcast.
All right, everybody. So here is the interview that we teased to you. Andrew, thank you for joining us tonight and talking with us.
Dude, I'm so excited to be here, man. Like, I've been catching up on some Graveyard Tales. Like, your Antarctica episode was like one of the most fascinating things I've ever listened to. So I'm just thrilled to death.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, that Antarctica thing was wild.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
I had no idea. I knew it was weird, but not.
Of all the places on Earth.
That weird.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
The place that 99.9% of us are not going to get to go.
Right.
Is one of the weirdest places in the world. But speaking of weird places, why don't you tell us, what do you do, and tell us about your podcast?
Yeah. My name's Andrew Crabtree. I have been a commercial videographer for, I don't know, the last 10, 12 years. And then just learning audio through the video side of it, got cocky enough to think, you know what? Like, I think I can do this podcast thing. I know how to edit audio on a timeline. So, I've dabbled around with a couple podcasts that went nowhere, but, about 2 years ago, wrote this script that is now called The Void. All kinds of backstory in that, and we can get into that as we go. But, just wrote a script, not necessarily even originally thinking it was going to be a podcast. I wrote a narrative that I thought I was going to try to lay into book deal, you know, like I went through, you know, tried to reach out to literary agents, and that whole thing is so gate kept. I was like, you know, I've been playing around with this podcast thing. Like, I want to make this a podcast. So formatted it as a script, and off we went. So, first foray into audio fiction, if you will.
Nice. Well, I know Matt and I have listened to it, and for a first foray, I wouldn't have thought that was your first foray into it.
Me either.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool because, and Adam and I were talking right before you came on, Andrew, and said we were thinking back, like right before we started Graveyard Tales, we were listening to serialized podcasts like this, you know, audio drama.
Yeah.
And they just kind of went away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's refreshing to have yours out there now, and it may help bring it back, because I love the old radio shows, the old detective shows.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of that.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is fantastic.
Audio dramas have been around forever, man. You know, like you've heard all the old stories and legends about like War of the Worlds when that was on the radio.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been around for a minute. And, you know, my wife listens to audiobooks like obsessively. And I'm like, you know, you can go and listen to audio dramas that are way higher produced, way more dramatic, and they're free.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Hey, let me just sit with an aside. You brought this up.
Yeah, go ahead.
The worst thing about an audiobook is when you're reading a book and your wife is listening to the audiobook at the same time and is like 5 or 6 chapters ahead of you listening to it while she's taking a shower. Yeah. And I'm going,
I can't listen to that.
Oh, man, I'm not that far.
Been there.
Yep.
So, and honestly, like, you know, having never made an audio drama, like, to be completely honest, when I started into this thing, I had never even listened to one. I thought I had stumbled on the most original idea ever. I'm going to put an audio drama on the podcast RSS feed. And then obviously as I went, I'm like, oh, well, this is actually a pretty developed genre. But I think parts of that, my inexperience and me just not knowing any better, it does almost come across like a mixture between an audiobook and an audio drama.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit of a different format. I think, you know, some people don't like that. A lot of people do. So like it is what it is. And I just made something that I thought I would want to listen to, you know?
Yeah. That's what you really need to do, because I know for Matt and I, and obviously ours is a different format than yours is, but it's that same thought. If you're going to try to make something to please everybody, you're going to end up pleasing nobody.
100%.
You've got to make it interesting for you and fun for you. And I guarantee you, there will be people out there who will like it as well. And like Matt was saying, it harkens back to some of the more suspense and horror audio dramas that we listened to long before we started our show. And it is cool to see it back, because I haven't listened to one in many years. And I like the direction that you're going with it, with what, you know, and I told Andrew before we started this, I'm not going to give away spoilers. You need to go listen to it.
Yeah, we want you to listen.
Right. But here we go.
But so, yeah. No. but I will say the town setting of Milton,
yeah,
is a very interesting idea, that it is a secluded, isolated town. And I was wondering, how did that come about? Was there just, did that just pull it out of your mind, or what?
I am glad you asked, because this might be the most fascinating part of my backstory of what brought me here. So,
he came from that town. I knew it.
Well, I will tell you so I live in a very small, like 5,000 person town in Southern Illinois. I've got the Shawnee National Forest on pretty well all sides of me. So like, in a way, it is a little bit modeled after, you know, where I live. And like, when I'm riding the town of Milton, I'm riding the town of Anna, Illinois. But yeah, so like, I literally, man, like, I wish that I could be like, oh, I'm just this creative of a dude. But I was asleep one night and woke up in the absolute middle of the night from the most vivid dream I have ever had. And, again, not to give too much away, but I don't think we're going to have too many spoilers with this. If you've listened to the show, which you guys have, like in episode 2, there's a scene where Sam is up against the fence and he's looking out at the void. And in my dream, I was like just looking down on this young guy that was standing at this fence, looking out into this wild, untamed, just scary as hell, you know, forest. And I don't know quite how I knew it in the dream, but I knew that like safety and like what I was used to was behind me, but there was like this unbelievable dark adventure in front of me. And so I literally woke up from that dream at like 2 a.m. I've still got the note on my phone. I pulled up my iPhone, opened the notes app, and I literally typed out the entire season 1 arc laying in my bed. And
oh, wow.
Obviously it's changed and evolved, but like, if I go back and read that note today, it is like pretty spot on to what it actually turned into. So it was just, woke up from a dream, grabbed my phone, woke up the next morning. And I was like, man, I had a weird dream. And I opened my phone, unlocked it. And I was like, oh, hey, I kind of remember this. And so off we went.
Man, that's way different than the crap I write down when I wake up in the middle of the night. It usually that turns into like a Patreon thing that not many people want to hear. And but you said,
we can't record this.
Yeah, right. Matt and I'll do a whole episode, and he's like, dude, you can't say that stuff. Well, you can't talk about that anatomically correct stuff. Now, you said you were in Illinois. Mm-hmm. My granddad, just to commiserate with you a little bit, my granddad was from Quincy, Illinois.
Yeah, it's up north of me. And
my wife's family currently live in Mattoon,
yep,
Illinois.
And yeah, so friends from there.
I've been there quite a few times, and I have to say, I enjoy that Mattoon part of Illinois, because out there, it's like nothing, and I love that.
You think that's nothing, keep going south, brother. I live in like if you can imagine a map, I live at the bottom of the state of Illinois. I'm like 30 minutes north of Kentucky.
Oh, okay.
And so Shawnee National Forest is like a 300,000 or 400,000 acre national forest that's like all on all sides of me. I think you'd have to, I hate to put this in the world without double checking it, but we're like the number 4 or 5 state in the country for confirmed, or like at least reported, Bigfoot sightings.
Oh yeah.
So it's,
I can believe it. I'm looking at you on the map.
Yeah. Here. It's down at the bottom, bud. Like it's, you know, we're in the sticks.
It's funny. Looking at this map, I noticed when I was in high school, our basketball team every year at like around Christmas would go to a basketball tournament in Carbondale.
Yeah. That's like 20 minutes north of me.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't play basketball, but I knew that's where they went.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was a big deal.
Southern Illinois University right there in Carbondale, Illinois.
Yep. Well, so we kind of got the idea of where Milton came from, but you might sum it up best without giving away spoilers. Can you tell everybody what The Void basically is and what it's about?
Yeah. So, that's a multi-layered question and I'll try to do it justice. in its most basic sense, right? Like I talked about my dream, like the guy looking out at this wild dark forest, right? And anybody who's ever spent time in the woods as a kid, you know, like your imagination runs wild. And I mean, you know, you can talk about horror and you talk about slasher films and stuff like that. But to me, the scariest stuff is the stuff that it's like just the unknown, like what's actually out there, right? And like, I don't even know that we know, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so like the woods have always been this like kind of creepy enigma to me. And so the void itself is this just wild, savage, dark forest that surrounds the town of Milton on all sides. Without giving too much away, the town of Milton was closed in 1994 for good. No traffic in or out because, you know, well, I won't get into that, but, I'm bordering on spoilers. But just like this idea that this dark force, you know, like this dark woods is like binding these people, it's repressing them. And so I think that's a huge, so like the multi-layer of this is like, yeah, it's the woods, but really it's representative of any number of things in real life, right? Like, so it's, to me, the void is as much as anything is a metaphor. So if you read the episode descriptions for every single episode, like I kind of end it with, you know, the characters of the void might be fictional, but be careful, you know, you might find yourself confronting your own reality and those things that bind you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like I have a history of anxiety, you know, like there's people that have addictions and bad relationships. Like what is that thing that it's like making you feel trapped or bound? And I think that like this journey into the void represents like those things that we have in our own personal lives that are meant to, you know, like the story is meant to say like, you know, like there's hope. There's a way through this darkness. And hopefully along the way, I scare you a little bit, but hopefully there's a overlying message behind the intensity.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
I've always felt like that, when you look into the darkness, you scare yourself way more than what's actually out there. You know, just by what you can develop in your own mind.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I think leaving the listener to ponder that, you know, adds that an extra layer to the suspense, the horror, the creating that thrill of what's on the other side. And that I love shows like that. I love books like that. So I mean, I think you've hit it right on the mark.
I think the personal growth is in like looking into the darkness and confronting it, right? Like, and you know, I think that that's kind of part of this void thing, right? Like the whole town has like been so scared of it and like they don't talk about it and they ignore it. And it's like, they're just refusing to tackle it. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, so like, hopefully, you know, I've had so many conversations with people since this thing launched where it's like, they'll tell me what the void is to them. They're like, the void is like depression or the void is, in, you know, addiction or whatever. I'm like, what do you want it to be? Because like, it's different for all of us.
Right.
Right.
And one thing that I got from it, and I've talked about this often, but the feeling that I got from The Void was spending a lot of time in Appalachia, there where Matt's at and everything, the old stories of the forests and the mountains there. And I used to go, like, I love the mountains. I love being out in the middle of nowhere and all that. But, you know, in Appalachia, there's always these stories of ancient entities out in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of got that sense with The Void that it's something ancient that's always been there, and Milton happened to show up.
Kind of awoke the beast.
Yeah, within its territory and kind of poked it a little bit.
Yep.
Because, oh, now there's fresh meat here that we can mess with.
And spot on.
All right, Matt. So let's take a second and talk about tonight's sponsor, Fume, and talk about bad habits. Now, we've all got a bad habit here or there. And Matt, you and I had the same bad habit for many years. Mm-hmm. And bad habits are, to put it bluntly, bad. And so maybe it's time that you ditch one of your bad habits. And by doing that, you can turn to Fume. Fume is here to help with a smarter alternative. It's a flavored air device. It's not a vape. It's not a pipe, but something completely different. Fume lets you satisfy the urge to reach for something without containing nicotine, vapor, or batteries. Plus, it comes with amazing flavors like crisp mint, which is my mother-in-law's favorite, spearmint ice, orange vanilla, cinnamon hearts, mango, or maple pepper, which was my favorite from the very beginning.
Yeah, and it's just, it feels so good in the hand. It takes that need to be holding something or putting something in your mouth away with, and it just replaces a bad habit with a better one. The weight is so nice. It's clicky, it's fiddly. And, you know, the maple pepper was my go-to flavor from the beginning, but the cinnamon hearts, it's fantastic. And it really helps to take that edge off when you would reach for your bad habit. Now, Fume has already helped over 700,000 people take steps towards better habits. And now it's your turn. Use our code TALES, T-A-L-E-S, to get a free gift with your journey pack. Head to tryfume.com. That's T-R-Y-F-U-M.com. And use our code TALES to claim this limited time offer today.
That's right. Use our code TALES, T-A-L-E-S, to get a free gift with your journey pack. Just go to tryfume.com, T-R-Y-F-U-M.com. And use our code TALES, T-A-L-E-S. I noticed, again, not to give away too many spoilers, but I noticed there are a lot of entities within The Void that Matt and I have covered or tangentially talked about. So I thought it would be cool to get, like, how did you come up with what you were going to weave into the story?
Yeah.
And how you were going to make them, these paranormal entities, fit within the story?
Yeah. Great question. And this is maybe the part that I'm most excited to talk to you guys about. So, like, knowing that The Void was this dark place, right? Like, how does that get represented? You can write a story about a guy going into the dark woods and, like, you can think that's scary, but, like, how can you actually, like, represent that in a more tangible way? Right.
Mm-hmm.
If talking about that original note I put down on my phone in the middle of the night, originally this was going to be like cryptid heavy, like the big, like Bigfoot, like the New Jersey Devil, like every cryptid you could possibly imagine. I was going to just cram into it. And then the more I got into it, there were two, and I won't call them, you know, one's a cryptid, I would say the other's not, but there were two, like, legends, folklore, you know, rooted things that I just really latched onto, and that, like, that was the Mothman and the Hat Man.
Yeah.
I told you guys off air before we started in here, like, the Mothman was like my gateway drug into cryptids, right? Like, I heard a podcast forever ago that just went way into detail on the Point Pleasant, you know, West Virginia thing, and, like, just really dug into it. And I'm like, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard. And so, like, that sent me down this Mothman rabbit hole. So, like, the Hat Man being not necessarily a cryptid, but, like, just crazy deep in folklore, right? Scares the crap out of me. Like, yeah. I've, I've read so many, I've gone down the Reddit hole on the Hat Man and read so many firsthand accounts of people that have had this, you know, dark hat wearing entity standing over their bed, or like they're in sleep paralysis. And like, so I really tried to make the Mothman and the Hat Man represent two kind of separate emotions. So anytime the Hat Man is around, like it's just fear. Like he brings fear out of anybody that's near him. And so like the Hat Man kind of represents fear, whereas the Mothman represents despair. So maybe similar emotions, but I think pretty different. So like there's like this really intense sadness that comes with a Mothman encounter, and then like just this overwhelming fear from the Hat Man. And so just trying to, you know, again, like whittle that down, right? Like the original story ideas and the original, most original versions of the script had way more cryptids in it. And I started just kind of peeling it back, and I was like, okay, let's let these two entities represent these two emotions that I want the void to kind of represent.
Yeah. And it's interesting because Matt and I have talked about the synchronicities of Graveyard Tales, where we'll cover something and then we'll randomly run into something that talks about what we just covered or what we're researching. And it's weird that it happened. Like we weren't searching it out, whatever. We just did a podcast with a friend of ours where we talked about shadow people and the Hat Man.
Yeah.
And then we just did a Patreon episode on Hat Man stories. So where I went and found a bunch of Hat Man stories, some on Reddit, you know, stuff like that. And we did that for our Halloween Patreon episode. But the Hat Man, you're correct on the feeling that it brings, because everybody that talks about it has like this existential dread.
Yeah.
And so when I was listening to The Void and he showed up and you brought that feeling to the character, I was like, oh, he knows what he's talking about. He's, you know, he's done his research. He's not just grabbing an entity from, you know, the Rolodex of paranormal stuff and throwing it in there. You actually brought the folklore with the Hat Man. And since we got you on here and we've talked about it several times here recently, what do you think the Hat Man is? Do you think it's its own like race of entity where there are multiple Hat Mans, or do you think it's like how we see, how we visualize something else?
That's a really good question. And I've thought a lot about it over the years. I always err on the side of there are just things about this world that we don't understand. Like, you know, we think we've got it figured out. Science thinks they've got it figured out, and they will call something fringe or they'll call something paranormal. And I'm like, dude, if you go down this Hat Man trail, there are thousands, tens of thousands of people that have seen something so similar. So whether that's physical or psychological, I don't think either one makes it more or less real. I've read enough Hat Man stories to think that there's probably multiple entities, because people have just slightly different stories, right? Where it's like the same feeling wearing the top hat, but I've heard of people that have like, he's holding a dead rabbit in his hand. And I've heard of people that he's like holding a top watch or a pocket watch, which I wrote into the first Hat Man encounter in the Void. Like he's got like a pocket watch. And so like, I think it's possible that like there would be multiple entities of the same race or background or however you want to present that.
But yeah. I always thought, what if it's not a humanoid shape wearing a hat? You know, what if it's some terrifying thing that it just looks like a hat to us, and it's just like its massive head is shaped so bizarre. It's got a big giant blade or horns coming out.
Man, like that's awesome.
Our brain wants to make it make sense.
Yeah.
Pareidolia.
We could absolutely be looking at something else and our brain is processing it to look like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it happens. We see it in so many other things. you know, why not this? But yeah, I think we agree that there's, because you listen to so many things that make you think this is a one thing that just travels around. And when we came across a story where there were actually two of them at the same time. So you're like, yeah, no, it's not one. There's a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever their goal is,
it doesn't seem friendly.
No, it's not. But it is such a polarizing thing, because these people that share these stories, there is so much emotion tied to this.
Yeah.
I mean, this is much more than, well, I thought I saw a ghost, or I heard footsteps upstairs and there was nobody in my house. Ooh, it was creepy. But you hear someone telling a story about a Hat Man encounter, I mean, it shakes them to their core.
Yeah.
Almost to the point where they are leery about sharing it.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and that really says something. I mean, you know, that's bringing out, you know, a feeling that most people never encounter.
I tell you what, one of the things that I think it was a podcast, it may have been something I read, it's been a minute, but when I was researching the Hat Man, I read a first person account, if you will, and it was a guy and his sister that had the same bedroom at different times, right? So like when one of them moved out, went to college, the other one moved into that room. They had these Hat Man encounters, but they didn't remember it. Like it happened, but like years later, they saw like a picture online of the Hat Man, and it just like snapped them out. And all of a sudden it was like, oh my gosh, like I remember this. And then the brother was like, oh my gosh, me too. So like the fact I mean, how many of us have had encounters that we don't even remember that are like just buried in our memories somewhere?
True. Yeah.
Yep. That's a good point. I for a long time, I couldn't watch or read very vivid like alien abduction encounters. And a friend of ours, TJ, told me, he said, well, maybe it's because you have been abducted and you're repressing it. And that gives you these feelings. I'm like, well, I feel sorry for the alien that abducted me. I'm just
send him back.
Yeah. It couldn't have been a pleasant experience.
This one is too hairy.
Yeah. This one's broken. Let's send him back.
Swap him out.
But you know what? That you bring that up, but if you've I had watched it, and then Adam came back and said, you need to go watch this. And I was like, I think I've already seen it. It's a documentary on Netflix about a woman in, is it Brooklyn or right in Manhattan, that she was abducted, like sucked right out of her dadgum window.
Yeah.
But she had these experiences and didn't recall them, but read this psychologist's book describing these people who had related these stories while under hypnosis, and she couldn't finish it. Mm-hmm. She was like, I would get so just emotional reading these stories, I had to put it down, and I had no idea why. And she wrote a letter to the author of this book, and he said, I would love to meet you.
Yeah.
And they wind up meeting, and he puts her under hypnosis, and all this stuff comes pouring out of her about these abductions that she had that her psyche had just buried.
Yep.
And she had no recollection of them until she went under hypnosis and was able to bring them out.
And that woman, the one that you're talking about, she was pulled out of her window, and to corroborate it, three or four people on the street watched her float out of her window and up into the sky.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's
bizarre. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Cause there are people that go, this lady is a loony or just a liar looking for attention. And then when they pull complete strangers, you know, out of the blue, that go, yeah, I remember seeing it. I was
I
thought it was some kind of magic
911.
Trick.
Yeah. You know, I was calling 911 because I didn't know what was happening. And so if there's that much corroborating evidence, I don't think it can be a hallucination or she's faking it.
Yeah, right.
I'm telling you, man, like, there's just stuff we don't understand. I mean, like, I think the thing, you know, like I talked about the Mothman being like the gateway drug for me to get into like cryptids and stuff. But like, I think that the moment that I'm on the right show for this. I'll go ahead and tell my story. I haven't told a ton of people this, but enough that they could back me up. I'm out walking my dog one night. And I live in the sticks, right? Like pretty dark, remote part of the world. Mm-hmm. I'm out walking my dog in my driveway. And my parents live maybe half a mile down the road from me. And the brightest, biggest ball of light I've ever seen in my life just flies down out of the sky, like as fast as you can imagine. Like, it looks like it's a star up there. And all of a sudden it's just like hovering between my house and my parents' house. And I'm like, what in the world? And I try to take a picture of it, and it's moving so fast that like, I've got this like real, it's like really blurry picture of this like really bright light. I get up my phone and it's just kind of hovering there. And I try to call my mom to see if she can see it too, or if I'm losing my freaking mind. My phone wouldn't work. And like, I've got great reception, but my phone would not call out. My dog lays down on the ground and starts whimpering, like won't move. So I'm just standing there watching this thing. Like, I don't know if to run back to the house or what. And then finally it just shoots right back up into the sky. And people have been like, oh, it's a drone. And I'm like, dude, I've flown drones. And if it's a drone, it's like, I mean, this thing was probably 20 or 30 feet, like in diameter, like,
oh, wow.
And bright.
Yeah.
So as soon as that thing shoots back off into the sky, I try to call my mom again. It goes through. But like, what's crazy is to this day, when you drive down my driveway at the spot where that thing was hovering, you drop out of reception for a couple seconds. Like, and that was like probably, I think it was during COVID. So probably like 5 years ago.
Wow.
Why? Wow. Like, it's so like at that point, crazy. that's when I'm like, okay, like the world is more than just like what it's presented to be.
Yep. For sure.
Adam, I don't think we've ever had anyone on the show or reach out to us with an encounter like that, quite that cool.
No.
I mean, we've had people tell us, you know, they've seen things in the sky, but nothing that came down that they were able to get a really good look at.
Yeah.
I'll send you the picture awesome. When we're done. I'm still on my phone, but it's just, and it's blurry because the thing was, you know, darting around a little bit and just kind of hovering right there and then shoots straight back up into the sky.
That's wild, man. Yeah. I've never personally had a UFO experience where I've seen anything. I thought I had, and then it started blinking red and green, and I was like, no, that's a plane. So I was hoping too much to see something. And yeah,
well, this one caught me completely off guard. Like I wasn't even at that point in my life, probably wasn't even like deep into cryptids or anything, like just walking my dog.
Mm-hmm. And that may be why, because I think those of us that, not fully why, but those of us that want to have that experience are probably not going to have that experience.
Yeah.
But because it wasn't on your mind or whatever, you were lucky enough to get to witness it. And you didn't have any like loss of time that you know of or anything.
I just went back into the house. My wife's like, I told her, I was like, you're not going to believe this. I showed her the picture and she's like, you're nuts. I'm like, I'm not.
I'm not nuts. I have photographic evidence.
I can tell you after taking that picture, I can commiserate with the people that have like the blurry, grainy Bigfoot pictures. Cause I'm like, and I'm a professional photographer. Like that's like part of what I do for a living. And
yeah,
I'm like sitting there trying on my phone as best I can. And it's just like, it's blurry, but you can see it's there.
Yeah. Your dog's reaction to me is a very telling thing, because we've said it before, but animals see and know more than we do.
Oh, for sure. They're perceptive, man.
Yeah. I had a dog that he was half beagle, and he's the one that made me aware that the house I was living in Tennessee had a ghost.
Oh, no.
Because it was happening down the hallway. And so I was sitting there watching TV, and I'd notice for like a week, Dallas would go down the hall, just like intently staring down the hall watching. And at first I just thought he was nuts, You know, it's like, what is this dumb dog doing? But then I started like paying attention, and when he would perk up, I'd start looking, and you could see something crossing my hall. Mm. And so ended up, you know, doing a little more investigating into it. And we figured out, yeah, there's a ghost there. We called him Jack, but that's just because we didn't have anything else to call him. So, but yeah, that your dog's reaction to lay down and whimper kind of, to me, says there was something bigger and more powerful there than just a normal.
As soon as that thing shot back up in the sky, the dog stood back up and just started pulling me back to the house. It was like, let's we're going, bud. Like, we're done.
Yep.
Yeah. He's like, I don't have to poop anymore. Yeah. It scared it out of me. I'm done. But you had a little bit ago, you had mentioned something in passing that Matt and I have talked about it. You said, you know, scientists and people will call things fringe, mm-hmm. and then kind of move on. We've discussed that a lot with Bigfoot.
Yeah.
That, you know, there is obviously something that people are seeing. Now, we're
tens
not.
Of thousands of people that are corroborating the same story. Like, come
right,
on.
Right. We're not saying that it's a giant monkey out there, but there's something. And by not looking into it, you're trying to make it not credible or whatever. And I heard a quote the other day. And Matt, I haven't told you this quote yet. I wrote it down and Andrew reminded me of it. Colm Kelleher, and y'all probably know who Colm Kelleher is. He was doing the Skinwalker Ranch book and stuff. He said, science is supposed to represent the investigation of the unexplained, not the explanation of the uninvestigated.
Mm. That's good.
And
that's
pretty good. Like, dude, I wrote it down as soon as I heard it, because I'm like, that's exactly it. That's what we've been saying for a while, is just because you explain something away with a low-hanging fruit explanation of, oh, well, they're misidentifying bears, or, you know, the Hat Man. Oh, well, that was just a hallucination during sleep paralysis when the chemicals, da-da-da-da-da.
Benadryl-induced. You hear that a lot. Oh, yeah. Taking drugs or something, you know?
Yeah, right. You took sleep aids.
Yeah.
Was it Ambien? Did you take Ambien? You're basically blowing it off so that nobody will take these witnesses seriously. And like you were saying, Andrew, we need to look into it and investigate these things, because I think there's a lot to learn. We may not come to the conclusion that the Hat Man is a race of supernatural beings out there sent to Earth to terrify humans. But we may come up with a whole nother explanation for it, the legitimate one, and it's something we didn't know about. Because all the time we hear from NASA scientists and stuff, oh, this comet is doing something unexplained, and it's rewriting the way we think about, okay, why do we need to look out that far? You know, we got a lot of stuff here on Earth that if we look into, it may rewrite physics. It may rewrite how we think about our history, or the way science has claimed this works the whole time.
You said it yourself. It's like rewrite history, right? But if you look at history, you know, like I modern man is so arrogant, right? Like, we think that, like, yeah, we've only figured out how things work in the last 50 years, and that's anything outside, yep, of that, like this physical box that we've defined that we teach in schools. But like, if you go to history, you don't have to go back very far to where the supernatural was an accepted part of life.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, read the Old Testament, right? Like, going back like 6,000, 8,000 years ago, like, this was like commonplace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the void, to bring it back to that, being a weird part of a forest, how many ancient cultures had, you know, sections of forest that you don't go into because of the entity that lived there?
Yeah,
whether forbidden. It be Bigfoot, or whether it be something demonic or whatever. And we chalk, as modern humans, our hubris says, well, that's just the, you know, the dumb natives. They don't know what they're talking about. They had to try to explain something away. And so they came up with this. What if that's what we're doing? We're explaining it away, and they had it right.
Yeah. Spot on, man.
I think that's exactly what we do, because it's either too hard to accept. You know, you put your own fears and biases in front to protect your own mm-hmm. mental health. You're like, if I can accept this, then I have to accept all these other things as possibilities. And I think that's one thing that Adam and I with Graveyard Tales always said. We're not telling you this stuff is real. We're not telling you what to believe. We're just asking you to open your mind to the possibility that it could be.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't share any information. Just like having you on, Andrew, and talking about your show, we're not telling anybody, you know, hey, this is exactly how things are, and you just won't accept it. Like, you know, look, this is what people experience. These are the things that regular people see every day, and they keep it to themselves because they're too nervous to tell somebody else, because they're like, their biases are going to make me a kook.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be that. But it's just like your experience. This was real. I saw it. I'm not crazy. I know what I saw. But yet you were like, I don't tell too many people this because of that.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's just, yep. You know, it's not, I hate to say this, but it's not fair. You know, we all have an experience in our life that we just look back and go, man, that was really bizarre. Mm-hmm. And like, you should be able to share it. And I think if enough people would do that, then it would be more accepted, and we may learn a lot more about this world we live in than we know now.
Yeah. Like I'm going to go way off book here. Okay. It's like, I don't know if you can see over my shoulder. I've got the Art of Harry Potter book back here. I'm a Harry Potter nerd. there's a line in the seventh Harry Potter book where, I think Harry asks, like, was this all real? And Dumbledore says, he said, was this real or was it in my head? And he's like, basically says something to the effect of, just because it happened in your head doesn't make it not real. And so like, maybe these things like the Hat Man, maybe they're not physical things that fit into our physics bubble that we teach. Right. Like, but that doesn't mean it's not real.
Exactly. Yeah.
And how do we know that the physics bubble that we've been taught is a good explanation for how things work?
Yeah.
You know, all the time we're getting updates to scientific things. And that's the way it should be. That's the way, we think we've got it here. We thought the world was flat for a while. And then we realized, oh, wait, no, it's a sphere and everything else is a sphere because that's the easiest shape for matter to take in a vacuum. And so it's spherical. Then you've got people that have gone back to flat earth, but that's a whole nother rabbit hole. We're not going to,
that's
go
a whole
down.
Different podcast.
Yeah. That could be an episode all on its own. But as we look into stuff, we update our scientific findings. And so what we think now as, the physics standard could be updated in 50 years.
Sure, it will.
When we look into it more and we have more, you know, visitors from deep in space that come flying through our galaxy and stuff like that, we update how things are happening, because this 3I Atlas comet that's coming in, they said it's producing pure nickel. Well, we don't know how it would produce pure nickel, because that's supposed to be a manufactured thing. Right. It's not supposed to occur in nature. Well, yep. Either this is a manufacturing plant of pure nickel, or we were wrong, and pretty much pure nickel can be produced in nature, just in a way we didn't think. So, like you said, maybe what is in our heads is actually happening. But like Matt and I have talked about before, we can be standing next to each other, see something, and then explain it differently because we interpret.
Yeah.
And I've thought for a long time that we're not a CPU. Our brain's not a CPU. It is an antenna. And everything we have, we're picking up from the universe and signals and thoughts and memories and all that we're picking up. So what if these Hatman encounters and stuff, it's just you've tuned your brain radio to this frequency and now you can pick this up. Maybe it's always around us, but we just don't see it.
And maybe we never know the answers to a lot of this. We probably won't.
Yeah.
But like, kind of like you said earlier, like just allowing yourself to investigate it, allowing like being comfortable, being uncomfortable, right? Like we've just put ourselves into so many boxes as a society where it's like, well, if it doesn't fit the box, throw it out. And it's like, we don't have to have everything figured out. Like it's okay. And I think that, you know, bringing it back to the void, like I think that's part of it, right? Like is like just leaning into being uncomfortable, leaning into not having the answers, but just having the courage to take a step into it.
Yep. Yep. And I think it at one point, if I'm not mistaken, because it's been a little bit since I listened to the first episodes, wasn't there a part where one of the characters sees the Hat Man, but other people don't?
Yeah.
Okay.
Episode 3, I think.
Okay. So yeah, he experiences it, but other people don't.
Yeah. He feels the fear. He falls to his knees. Like, and everybody else is like, what is going on with this dude?
So it was there, but they didn't see it.
Yeah.
And he saw it. So I think that can happen, not just in your podcast, but I think that happens in real life sometimes where some of us are more sensitive to seeing these things, whether it be UFOs or ghosts or, you know, Matt is way more sensitive than I am. I'm more of a walk through and I could be bumping into ghosts and not know it. And, you know, Matt's like, hey, dude, you just checked one into the wall over there. Yeah. Sorry. You know, but I think that that's in your podcast. That's a good representation of how experiences can happen in the real world.
Yeah. And like, just to tie it to the podcast, I can't remember what episode it is right now. And maybe you've gotten there, maybe you haven't, but I think it's episode 6 where there's like a time loss element to it as well. Like sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. Like it's, you know, like just allowing your brain to go into the what if, because we sure don't have it figured out. So like, maybe your what if scenario is just as logical or likely or true as what you read in a book, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I think you did an excellent job just putting that out there for the listener to interject their own fears. You know, it's like, you know, somebody that's afraid of the dark, somebody that gets nervous out in the woods, you know, somebody that, you know, won't walk their dog in their driveway at night because there's somebody out there or there's something out there that's watching me. I can feel it. I can tell. And, you know, through the characters, they experience that. And this is a good example. You know, this one person experiences the Hat Man and nobody else does. And he reacts to it. Same. I could, you know, there were times in my life I can remember that I didn't want to go downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to go down there. You know, I just watched my dad go down there and come back. Fine for him, but it's different for me.
It's not your reality.
Exactly. Yep. And, you know, allowing the listener to put themselves, you know, as a member of that community, as a person in that town experiencing this, you know, like I said at the beginning, it really brings out an emotion that engages the listener in a way that a lot of shows don't.
Well, man, I appreciate that, because I mean, that's probably about the highest compliment you can pay the writing. I really did, and I've told this story on a Director's Cut podcast I do on our Patreon, but like, I intentionally didn't give certain characters last names or physical descriptions, which is probably breaking a lot of rules of writing. But like, if you think about the character of Sam, who's our protagonist, his dad, Morris, and Sam's girlfriend, Beth, I never really describe their physical, you know, appearance, and I never give them a last name, because I want you to be able to see things through their lens. I want you to, I've heard so many people say like, oh man, like I identify with Sam or identify with Morris so much. And like, I think when you start, like if you give them an ethnicity or if you start over describing them, it takes the reader or the listener out of it. And yep. But like, I want you to be able to look at like, okay, what is the void to you? What is this character to you? And like, see yourself in it and try to live in their shoes for a minute.
I think you did a fantastic job with that.
Well, thank you, man. And I mean a great deal.
I think after listening to this, my wife and kid and I like to go get cabins out in the middle of nowhere for a weekend, you know, and just because we live in a medium city, not a big city, but outside of a big city.
They like to get as close to the void as they can.
Let's go.
Is what they do.
Yeah, that's exactly, buddy. That's exactly where I was going, is I'm going to think of it differently now, because there's been many times that we've gone out and gotten this little bitty cabin out in BFE and I'll step out on the back porch at night and it's just woods and no street lights, no nothing. You can't see houses. And I always get that little twinge like on the back of your neck that something possibly is out there watching me. I think that's going to heighten now after listening to the void.
Good.
Because now I'm going to feel like I'm standing at the fence and looking out. But I think any of our listeners, if you like the stuff that we talk about and you want it in a full like storyline, maybe, you know, harken back to some of the experiences that Matt has told on the show, I think you will like The Void, and I think you should go check it out. It's like we said at the top of this, it's one of the best audio drama podcasts that we've heard in a long time. And that's why we were happy to have you on and talk about it. And selfishly, it gave us another reason to talk about this weird stuff that we enjoy, because it's in The Void.
So. I love it, man. No, hopefully, you know, I would love for your listeners to check it out and, you know, hit me up on Instagram. Let me know what you think. Like, you know, are we seeing this the same as you? How do you see it? Because, you know, like that's been one of the most fun things about this entire experience has been, you know, like we're very humble beginnings on Patreon, but like the people that are on there that are really into it, like just having conversations with them and like just seeing it through their eyes, because like, you know, like, because I wrote it a certain way and like I kind of wrote it how I would experience it. Like there are people that like see it completely differently. And
yeah,
you know, like I had somebody message me like last week that was like, you know, like you get to a certain point in the story and there's like a female narrator for a little while. And she was like, man, like the fact that you included the female perspective, like made this so much more real to me. And like, I never thought of that when I wrote it. But like, yeah, just like the things that people pick up on or like the way they see it is like just, like, that's the coolest part for me, is like just seeing it through somebody else's eyes.
Yeah, I know our interactions with our listeners are always fun to us, because if we're doing research on a topic, we have our own thoughts about that topic. And obviously that's what we put out on the show. But then when we talk to listeners in the Facebook group or on Patreon, they do come away with a different way of looking at it. Matt and I will look at something and say, well, here's what we think about it. You know, tell us what you think. And then they do. And I'm like, see, that's why we keep saying, tell us what you think, is because you make us think about things differently. And with The Void, getting multiple interpretations of it would be really cool. Because, like Matt said, leaving it to the listener to be able to interject themselves in the story is a very cool thing you did, whether 100% intentionally in the beginning or whether it just kind of happened and you're like, oh yeah, I like that. I'm going to stick with that. It works. It works great. And it's not something that a lot of audio dramas have done. A lot of the ones that we listened to back in the day, it's a book and you're just reading what this character did or is doing. So I like the way you've set it up, and you do a good job mixing the sound effects into the story. 'Cause I think some can be overdone and some people just maybe sprinkle in crickets here and there, but you did a good job with the background audio of it. Mm-hmm. So
I got to shout out my guy. I will say The Void has been, it's like, you know, like I told you guys off camera, like so many of my friends contributed to this project. So like, hate it or love it, like all of the voice actors on there are like just my best friends in life, like not professionals. Like we just had the best time. But like it's largely been a solo project, right? Like I wrote it, I recorded it, I narrate most of it. You know, like I've got my friends that voice act, but like my guy, Aaron Wright, if he ever listens to this, and I'm sure he will, probably the number two most influential person on the project. And when you talk about like the audio mixing, if you could listen to the first drafts of this stuff, it's so bad. But Aaron was always like, okay, like how can you scale it back and keep the same emotions? Right. Like I would have so many more sound effects and so much faster pacing. And sometimes he would just be like, hey, sometimes it's more emotional if you let this breathe a little bit and maybe scale it back. So like any of the like sound design credits, I'm going to share equally with my good friend, Aaron.
Yep. Well, y'all did good. 'Cause yeah, he's right. Sometimes you gotta, I guess the absence of anything right before you get a noise or a sound effect really heightens that emotion. You kind of get stuck in that. I don't like calling it dead air, but Matt and I have talked about that when we started the show. We're like, well, we don't want dead air. We don't want dead air. So I would edit it quicker.
Yeah.
Where I would cut pieces where we'd say something and then we'd think about it for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And now we just leave in that dead air because I won't name morning shows, but you listen to morning shows and they can't have dead air.
No.
So, you know, they'll say something and then they'll do the noise and stuff to fill the dead air. And I like the dead air sometimes.
Yeah.
It builds tension. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think what I've learned editing this is like, you know, the deeper we get into this, there are times where I realized that the most suspense was just to have nothing. Like if you mm-hmm. have like the sounds of the forest and you have like subtle sound effects or music throughout a long period of time. And then, you know, like I would try to get to these intense suspenseful moments and then just build them up and more layers of audio. And then what I realized is like, actually it's more intense if I completely cut it dead air. Like if you're used to that subtle background noise and then all of a sudden it's gone.
Yeah.
Like that's more in the moment than building it up even grander. So like there's definitely moments that we'll get into as this thing, you know, gets further down the road where you're going to hear, like, it just gets quiet.
Mm-hmm. And that reminds me of, I don't remember who initially said it, but it was years ago. I heard it called the Oz effect.
Mm.
And that's where when you're experiencing something paranormal, like you're out in the woods and Bigfoot is about to appear, the Oz effect is where crickets stop, the wind stops blowing, the trees stop rustling, everything goes silent, and you realize, crap, it's really quiet.
Yeah.
And then the paranormal thing jumps and happens. And it's a really good technique in audio drama, since you're not looking at anything. It causes your brain to do that questioning, what is happening? And
yeah. So like if you go back and listen to any encounter with the Hat Man, like it talks about like like the fear, like the feeling of dread that leads up to it. And so like, mm-hmm. I've got the same subtle song, like there's like a Geiger counter sound effect, like it's like real subtle static kind of thing. And then there's like mm-hmm. the same little, like two or three note little music thing. And then like, when you actually see him, it stops. And yeah. like the sounds of the forest cut out, like the sounds, like the whispering of the shadow men cut out. And it's just like you and the Hat Man. And like, yep. I playing off of like reading the same stuff you are, I guess. Cause it's like, I've always heard that like right before it gets intense, like it gets quiet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do a good job of putting that into the show. So I'll say it again, everybody that's listening, go check out The Void. Andrew has put, and his friends have put a lot of work into The Void, and it shows, and you will enjoy it, I promise. Mm-hmm. And I'll put links in the show notes to where you can find Andrew and The Void and all that. So Andrew, thank you again for joining us tonight and talking weirdness with us.
Guys, this was a blast. This is the most fun I've had in a while.
Well, good. Awesome. We're glad you came, man. It's been great. Yeah.
Yeah.
We really enjoyed it.
Maybe next season of The Void that drops, we'll have you back on to talk about it.
Deal. We're already in production. Season 2 is written and we're going to start recording it right away. Just a teaser as your audience listens to this, the season 2 is a little bit more psychological, I think. So like, whereas season 1 is a little bit more physical, season 2 is a little bit more psychological.
Cool. Cool. That'll be good. So everybody go check out The Void everywhere that you're listening to us. You can find The Void. Go check them out. Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, guys. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you again to Andrew Crabtree from the Void podcast. Man, that was a great interview.
That was
fun. I love talking to him, and we look forward to having him on the show again. And you know, Adam, Andrew shared a personal experience with us, a personal story, and we are coming up quickly on the time for you to share your personal stories. If you've got a story, an experience, whether it's a ghost, the Hat Man, a UFO, or just something in your life that was uber creepy, mm-hmm. now is the time. Send in your listener stories for our Christmas show. It's a Graveyard Tales tradition for us to read our listener stories, celebrating that old Victorian tradition of telling ghost stories around the Christmas Eve fire. So
absolutely,
get them in. Time is ticking. We want to make sure we get them soon enough so that we can go through, you know, get them all, you know, edited out so that we can read them on the show live.
Yep.
So what's our deadline, Adam?
I will put up a deadline on Facebook and okay. social media, cause I'm not 100% sure, but it's coming up in a couple weeks.
Yeah. So get your pens, get your paper, get your typewriters, get them out, write down those stories and send them in. You guys blow us away every single year. We have no doubt you'll do it again this year.
Yep.
Don't forget to go check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. There you can find that unique gift for the member of the graveyard in your family, mm-hmm. from t-shirts to coffee mugs to posters and shorts and baby onesies. We got it. Yep. We got so much in there. We got some
hats
newer
on
stuff.
There too now.
Hats. Yeah, you name it. But on our website, you can listen to the show and you can become a patron. And thank you so much to people who have donated to the work that Adam and I do. 8 years of this. We're looking mm-hmm. forward to the next 8 years. It's because of you guys that support the show, keep us going, and we appreciate it so much. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.